Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up over the next half hour, we'll be hearing episode 14 of our radio drama on the life and apostleship of St. Paul to the ends of the earth. But first, a sneak preview of Pope Benedict's Sunday apostolic visit to the Mediterranean island of Sardinia off the coast of Italy. I sat down with our resident Vatican watcher, Joan Lewis, who gives us a look ahead at the Pope's itinerary and the purpose of this trip. The first thing that comes to mind when people think about Sardinia is this beautiful island, which, you know, draws people from all over the world with their million-dollar yachts. And
exactly.
It's a very exclusive tourist destination.
Part of it. You're right. That's probably what it's known for, anybody who's visited the Costa Smeralda, the Emerald Coast, or has had a yacht or something, does think of this side of Sardinia. However, I mean, there's many, many pockets of poverty and unemployment and many social problems and so forth on other parts of the island. It's the second largest island after Sicily in the Mediterranean, and obviously it is a part of Italy. But we know that the problems that the rest of Italy is facing are also mirrored in Sardinia. But you're right, it really is a place where the wealthy go to play and sail their yachts and everything else. But the focus this weekend is certainly going to be on one of the lovelier stories, really, of the island. The Pope is going to just be spending Sunday in Cagliari. It's going to be his 11th apostolic trip in Italy, and quite a number of those we have seen have been Marian trips, visiting a certain shrine. And what he's going to visit is a shrine that's probably not as well known to maybe people on the peninsula of Italy as it is to the Sardinians, and that is to say Our Lady of Bonaria. And it's got a very, very wonderful story, which I'll tell in a minute. Let's just kind of look at what the Pope's schedule is really going to be. He will become the third Pope to visit Sardinia. 1970 saw Paul VI go there. 1985, John Paul II went there. And so it's been a few years. It's been 23 years. But the highlight of the day will obviously be the Pope's visit to the shrine of Our Lady Bonaria, his saying Mass there. It is built up on a hill by the same name, the port, and that's how Our Lady arrived at this port. We'll tell that story in a minute. The port has the same name. But there are, I don't know how many steps up to the entrance, to the shrine and to the basilica. And it's going to be, the altar will be just outside of the church at the top of those steps. And the statue, which is normally in the apse of Our Lady of Bonaria, will be brought out. And we know that a very significant part of the Pope's day will be at the end of Mass when he replaces a little wood boat that Our Lady is holding in her hand, in one of her hands, and of course the baby Jesus is in the other, and he's holding the world in his hands. And the boat will be replaced. It's made of wood. It will be replaced by a boat made of gold. Now, we're commemorating, it's a year later, but the Pope will be commemorating the 100th anniversary of Pius X naming Our Lady of Bonaria as patron of Sardinia in 1907. And, of course, last year would have been the real anniversary, but the Pope had other engagements, other trips, so he came to Sardinia this year, and that's what we're celebrating. So Mass, that act of giving the new little boat for the Virgin to hold in her hands, is the high point of the day. But obviously the Holy Father, as he often does, probably always does on his trips, he will meet with the bishops afterwards. He will have lunch with them. There will be a brief rest period. He will meet with seminarians. He's going to go to the cathedral. He will also meet with young people before he returns to Rome. So it's about a between 10 and 12-hour day for the Holy Father that he will be away from Castel Gandolfo.
Joan, before you continue, I just wanted you to listen to something. A little bit of traditional Sardinian music that came out of this tradition of shepherding in Sardinia. It's quite unusual, and I think our listeners would find it interesting. It's the sort of music that the Pope will probably be hearing in one or two of the events that he'll be attending in Sardinia on Sunday.
When you hear it, you almost actually think of Scotland, don't you? And bagpipes.
Sure, the bagpipes.
Sure.
The shepherds in Sardinia make the bagpipes out of the skins of the sheep. So anyway, let's look a minute about the story of how Christianity arrived on this remote island, because it takes a long time. If you're in a boat, it takes a good half a day to get there, at least.
It is quite a trip, and actually, I mean, you're talking about the early centuries of Christianity. When we look at, and we're going to do that at a later point, and we look at some of the popes who were exiled there or so forth, we're talking, you know, the 200s, 300s, 400s, and so forth. So Christianity has a long history. And what I think is absolutely fascinating, because it's such a big part of the history of this island, is the arrival, actually, of Our Lady of Bonaria, how she came to the shores of Sardinia. And this is, the shrine is actually one of the few evidence, I mean, we're talking so many, many centuries ago, one of the few places that does go back so many centuries, this building on the hill. And of course, over time, there have always been political vicissitudes, weather vicissitudes, and many other things. And the shrine has been enlarged and changed and renovated and so forth. Alphonse of Aragon had conquered the city of Cagliari in 1324. And 11 years later, the church that was on the spot was given to the friars of the Order of Our Lady of the Merced, the Mercedarians. And they built a convent that still today is used to accommodate monks. Now, go ahead a little bit to 1370. There was a huge storm off the shores of Sardinia, and just opposite the city of Cagliari, and a ship that was coming in from Spain was very surprised, a storm that developed very suddenly. And so in an attempt to save the boat, they thought if they threw everything overboard, that, I don't know why, it seems like if you have weight on the boat, that would help. But anyway, they wanted to throw everything into the sea. Well, as soon as they took one of the boxes, a crate, actually fairly sizable, threw it in the sea, the storm immediately stopped. Well, obviously, they wondered what on earth was in that crate. They opened it. As soon as they got to port, the port of Bonaria, it was opened by one of the friars who discovered a wooden statue of Mary with Jesus, of course. Well, can I tell you, I mean, the devotion began that instant and has spread to our day. We're talking, you know, 650 whatever years later. The statue is particularly venerated by sailors, for whom Mary is obviously one of their big patronesses. We know Mary, Star of the Sea, is one of her titles. Now, the shrine was actually built between 1323 and 1326, and of course we have her coming in shortly after that, arriving in this port. And moving ahead a couple of centuries, it was on September 13th, 1907, that Pope Pius X proclaimed Our Lady of Bonaria as the great patron of Sardinia. And there's a museum, actually, next to the cloister of the convent that goes and tells us with objects and words and so forth the story of this statue. And one other thing that does remain is the crate that actually is said to have carried the statue of Our Lady to the island. Now, as I said earlier, the statue itself resides normally, when the Pope is not there, in the apse of the of the shrine. Mm-hmm. And it's really a very, very beautiful sculpture. As I said, she has Jesus in one hand, he's holding the world, and in the other hand, she has a small boat, which actually is used as a candle holder. The wood one was. I don't know if the new gold one, I'm going to just assume, obviously, will also be used as a candle holder.
Now, I'm not sure you can answer this, but do you have any idea why they're exchanging a gold boat for the wooden boat?
To be honest, I actually did an awful lot of research. I do not know the answer to that. Mm-hmm. Whether someone had wanted to make a gift to Our Lady and they were using the occasion of the papal visit to, when you think of a wood boat that she was holding in her hands, it's been there for like 650 years. It's braved a lot of vicissitudes, as we said earlier. And so maybe somebody thought, well, she's going to be around a lot longer. Let's make something permanent. Or simply to honor her. Because you see, gold is used so often to honor a statue or a painting. How many paintings have you and I ever seen in Rome? I don't even know if we know the number, of maybe just Our Lady or Our Lady holding the baby Jesus, and both of their heads are crowned with gold.
Real gold.
Real gold crowns. Mm-hmm, sure. So the original painting didn't mm-hmm. have that. But mm-hmm. then you had a pope or a cardinal or a bishop or maybe simply a well-intentioned Catholic who wanted to honor this or that particular, you know, statue or painting of Our Lady. So crowns were made, and then they are affixed to the painting.
All right, Joan, I'm afraid we'll have to end it there, but we'll be back in studio on Sunday talking a little bit more about this trip of Pope Benedict's to Cagliari in Sardinia. So thanks very much. See you tomorrow.
We'll see you exactly. See you tomorrow.
Well, a traveling pope couldn't have a better companion on today's program than St. Paul, whose voyages took him across many distant lands, spreading the good news. Well, here now is episode 14 of Jill Bevilacqua's radio drama on the life of St. Paul, To the Ends of the Earth. Enjoy it.
Last week, you heard how Paul had occasion to take Peter to task. How Paul set off on another missionary journey, this time with Silvanus, joined later by Timothy, and how Luke the doctor came into the story. Today's episode tells of a vision Paul has, which changes his plans. How he meets and converts Lydia of Philippi, how Paul and Silvanus are imprisoned, then freed after an earthquake, and are on their way once more.
There, Paul. That should help you to sleep.
It smells very pleasant. Fragrant. What is it?
It's an infusion of local herbs I use for, well, cases like yours.
And what is my case? Does it have a name?
I can't say as yet, Paul. I need to observe you over a period of time.
Well, you'll be able to do that, all right, if you come with us. But tell me, are you serious about that? I mean, you'd leave your work, your patients, and tag along with this band of vagabonds.
Paul, it's so good to meet you. As a person, I mean, apart from your preaching. You know, you're quite formidable when you get going.
So they tell me. But that's the spirit working in me. The real Paul is only, well, you saw today, a weak vessel.
Yes, Paul. But a vessel filled with the Holy Spirit. Now you must rest. In the morning, we'll talk about our future life together.
Night, Luke. Thank you.
And a vision appeared to Paul in the night. A man of Macedonia was standing beseeching him to come across the sea and help the people there. Once he had seen this vision, Paul lost no time in arranging a passage to Macedonia, convinced that God had called him and the other disciples to bring the good news to the Macedonians. Sailing from Troas, they made a straight run for Samothrace, the next day for Neapolis, and from there for Philippi, a Roman colony and the principal city of that particular district of Macedonia. After a few days in this city, they went along the river outside the gates, as it was the Sabbath, and this was a customary place for prayer.
So there's no synagogue in Philippi?
No, there are so few Jews, you see. So on the Sabbath, everyone meets here, down by the river, for prayer, the ritual ablutions.
That's enough now, girls.
That lady must be quite important. Did you see the way those girls stopped playing around as soon as she spoke?
She's a woman of some standing, a seller of purple, I'm told, from Thyatira.
Oh, isn't that the place where they dye cloth?
Yes, and it's famous for its dyes. But what's happened to Paul and Silvanus?
Maybe Paul's sick again. He was very quiet last night at supper.
Paul will be all right, don't you worry. But he may have to put up with this condition, this weakness, as he calls it, for the rest of his life. It might be what we call chronic. I don't know.
And so you can't...
I'll do what I can, Timothy, never fear. I'll keep an eye on him. And whenever he needs
me...
Hey,
Timothy! Luke! Wait for us!
There you are.
I was getting worried.
We took a wrong turning. I couldn't remember once we got outside the walls whether we had to go left or right.
Shh, come on down here. They've already started.
Ah, well, let's join them. And then we can tell them the good news.
They sat down and preached to the women who had come to the meeting. One of these women was called Lydia, a devout woman from the town of Thyatira, who was in the purple dye trade. She listened to them, and the Lord opened her heart to accept what Paul was saying. After she and her household had been baptized, she sent them an invitation.
Sirs, my mistress would like you to accept hospitality at her house.
That's very kind, but we already have a lodging, thank you. Please tell your mistress we greatly appreciate her offer all the same.
But she'll never... I mean, Mistress Lydia, she's very... I mean, she won't...
Won't take no for an answer, is that it?
Yes. Oh, that's it.
All right, I'll come over and talk to her.
Oh, will you? Oh, thank you.
And I myself work always to supply all our needs, so as not to be a burden to anyone.
You will not be a burden. You will be a guest, dear Rabbi, you and your companions.
I am not a rabbi, madam. I am a servant of our Lord Jesus Christ. Paul is my name.
Paul, then. I insist that you accept my hospitality.
But madam...
Lydia is my name.
Lydia.
Tell me, Paul, do you really consider me a true believer in the Lord?
Certainly I do.
Then come and stay with us, and I won't...
Take no for an answer.
One day, as they were going to prayer, they met a slave girl who was a soothsayer and made a lot of money for her masters by telling fortunes. This girl started following Paul and the rest of them and shouting,
"Here are the servants of the Most High God. They have come to tell you how to be saved."
She did this every day afterwards until Paul lost his temper one day and turned around and spoke to the Spirit.
"I order you in the name of Jesus Christ to leave that woman."
The Spirit went out of her then and there. When her masters saw that there was no hope of making any more money out of her, they seized Paul and Silvanus and dragged them to the law courts in the marketplace, where they charged them before the magistrates.
Quiet there, all of you. What's going on? Who are these men? What do you want?
We want to make a charge.
These men have ruined us.
Rob us of our living.
One at a time.
These people.
Slowly, please.
These two men.
What people?
More than two. Two others.
That's enough. Two will do for the moment. Oh, God preserve me. Go on, then. What have they done? They look harmless enough to me.
That's what you think.
Yes,
you should have seen what they did to our girl.
What? That's what it is it? They've been molesting women. I know their sort.
No. You don't understand.
Well, if you'd explain properly, maybe I would. Now, first of all, who is this girl? And where is she anyway?
She's probably hiding with these fellows' companions. Just wait till I get over there.
Are you going to tell me who she is or not? Never mind where she is for the moment.
She's a soothsayer. Tells fortunes. You know.
You mean she has a python spirit?
What's that? Don't show your ignorance. Yes, my lord.
You never heard of the serpent python of the ancient Delphic oracle? Of course not. You're ignorant men. Go on with your story. This girl of yours, how's...
Well, she's a slave girl, sir. You understand?
you make use of her, of her powers.
That's it, sir. That's it exactly.
But since these men arrived with their Jewish practices...
Oh, they're Jews, are they? I thought they were a minority in Philippi. We've never had any trouble before, that I remember.
No, but these men are different. They've been caught under disturbance in the city,
advocating practices which it is unlawful for us as Romans to follow.
It is quite lawful. It is quite lawful for Jews to practice their religion as long as they do not proselytize Romans.
Proselyte? What?
Preach to us, idiot. No, my lord. No, that they did to our girl was to stop her prophesizing. I mean, what she's used to do. Telling the future. Helping people to plan their lives.
And now she's lost her gift, and we've lost our living.
Well, it's a shame. It's a wicked shame.
Robbing us.
And as the crowd joined in and showed its hostility to Paul and Silvanus, so the magistrates had them stripped and ordered them to be flogged. They were given many lashes and then thrown into prison, and the jailer was told to keep a close watch on them. So, following his instructions, he threw them into the inner prison and fastened their feet in the stocks. Late that night, Paul and Silvanus were praying and singing God's praises while the other prisoners listened. Suddenly, there was an earthquake that shook the prison to its foundations. All the doors flew open and the chains fell from all the prisoners.
Wait a moment. Think of the jailer. If he finds anyone missing, you know what he'll do.
When the jailer woke and saw the doors wide open, he drew his sword and was about to commit suicide, presuming that the prisoners had escaped. But Paul shouted at the top of his voice,
"Don't do yourself any harm. We're all here."
The jailer called for lights, then rushed in and threw himself trembling at the feet of Paul and Silvanus.
Oh, sirs! Oh, masters!
Calm yourself. Have no fear. All is well.
But tell me, I beg of you, what must I do to be saved?
Become a believer in the Lord Jesus, and you will be saved, and your household too.
Oh, yes! Come then. Come, sirs.
Then they preached the word of the Lord to him and all his family. Late as it was, he took them to wash their wounds and was baptized then and there with all his household. Afterwards, he took them home and gave them a meal, and the whole family celebrated their conversion to belief in God. When it was daylight, the magistrates met in the marketplace. Remembering the earthquake that had taken place, they were afraid and sent the officers to say, "Release the men you arrested yesterday." The jailer reported the message to Paul.
"The magistrates have sent an order for your release."
"Oh, they changed their minds."
"So you can go now and be on your way in peace."
"What? They flog Roman citizens in public and without trial and throw them into prison and then think they can just push them out on the street? Oh, no. They must come and escort us out themselves."
"Oh, so you are Roman citizens?"
"Yes, we tried to tell them yesterday when they were carrying us off, but with all the screaming and shouting, no one heard."
"That's serious, though. When the magistrates are told that they flogged Roman citizens..."
"There are heavy penalties, isn't that so?"
"Oh, indeed. The Lex Porcia."
"Well, you tell the officers what I said, my friend. We are not budging an inch from this place."
The officers reported this to the magistrates, who were horrified to hear the men were Roman citizens. They came with a number of friends to the prison to apologize.
You must understand, sirs, we did not realize.
We had no idea you were holy men.
If we had known what it was you wanted...
Such a thing would never have occurred.
In Philippi, we've never had a case of this sort.
Now, gentlemen, we must beg you to leave this town.
Yes, as soon as possible, before you're seen and recognised.
We don't want another mob gathering.
And so Paul said, you'd better tell them we're not moving from here. They can come and get us.
But the earthquake, I never felt anything. Did you, Luke?
It was a divine earthquake, Timothy. The Lord's way of getting us out of another scrape. It was all over in a few minutes.
Yeah, but it was an earthquake, all right. The whole place shook. And you should have seen the other prisoners. Some of them were quaking with fright. And the others couldn't wait to get out when they saw their chains were loosed and the doors were all swinging open.
We never felt a thing here. Timothy and I were out of town with Lydia. As you know, she had a sick friend who'd heard about us and the good news and wanted to meet us. And I thought maybe I could be of some use. And, well, what time was it when we got back to Philippi?
Well after supper time. Uh-huh. The servants were in a state because they thought their mistress was down in the town and they'd heard about some riot and that a couple of Jews had been accused of beating up a woman. And, well, you can imagine the rest.
Lydia was really upset when she heard what they'd done to you. She was all ready to go down and protest to the authorities, but we thought it best she stay out of the way. They could make life difficult for her when we're no longer around.
But where is Lydia?
She was resting.
Yes, it's all right. You can leave it there at the garden.
Yes, she is.
There you all are. I was beginning to think you'd gone without saying goodbye.
We wouldn't do that, Lydia. We came straight from the prison. We wanted to see you and your family and all the disciples and pray together once more.
Oh, yes. Let us celebrate the Lord's Supper together. It's so beautiful. But, oh, I'm forgetting I haven't even asked you how you are, both of you. Has Luke dressed your wounds?
It's a privilege to suffer for the Lord, Lydia. And we gained more disciples for him, didn't we, Silvanus?
Oh, we did indeed. The jailer and his family. But, Paul, these people, when we've gone, who will help them to...
To keep the faith? Mm. Well, Lydia, to start with. She's a proved disciple. But she won't be alone, will she, Luke?
You mean Luke's going to stay here?
For a time. We talked about it. Thought it might be a good idea.
To help Lydia strengthen the disciples in the faith, answer their questions, and pray with them.
And what about now, Paul? Before you leave, I mean.
Oh, yes. We must pray together. Break bread.
I'll send my girls immediately to assemble the household.
And so, Paul, where are we going next?
Yes. Where's it to be?
I thought maybe Thessalonica. Lydia was saying that she has a customer there, someone called Jason. Said we could look him up.
And may the Lord be with you and bring you once again to Philippi.
You have been listening to episode 14 of our radio drama, To the Ends of the Earth. Taking part in this episode were Arthur Baum, Kenneth Belton, John Gayford, Jack Gillen, Maya Glickman, David Horton, Don Hodson, Anna Mazzotti, Adrian McCourt, Pat Stark and Veronica Wells. The sound engineer was Tommaso Palottino. The programme was written by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett in the studios of Vatican Radio in Rome.
Thanks so much for joining us here on Vatican Radio's English program. I'm Tracy McClure. Laudator Jesus Christus.